Hello everyone and welcome to Blacksiders, the no holds barred conversation about news and current affairs that we feel like talking about. I'm Peter McGillivray.
And I'm Gemma McKinnon.
Gem, what's been going on?
I had such a great weekend.
Tell me.
My Nana turned 90 years old over the weekend, and we had a lovely little picnic in Parramatta Park. But I just love her so much.
Happy birthday, Nana.
Happy birthday, Nana Mac. She has, like, been the... You know, she has six kids. All of those people have had several kids. She's just a real matriarch, and she's just the loveliest little lady too.
She really is. I've heard so many great stories about Nan.
Butter would not melt, and she used to look after me after school. I lived in her house a lot. So I have very fond memories of having afternoon tea with her, and she'd always have sayos with Vegemite on them ready for me. A nice arrowroot.
Yum.
With butter.
So March, that would mean that Nan is a Pisces?
Nan's a Pisces.
Yeah. Does she fit the Pisces characteristic?
Actually, a lot of my childhood friends are Pisces.
Huh.
I don't know. They're all actually, I have to say, all the Pisces I know are like really genuinely nice people. They don't really have any kind of negative feelings or...
Well, my sister has Pisces in her chart. Right. She's genuinely nice.
Yeah. Look at us gushing over our family. How about you? How have you been?
I've been good, thanks. I'm going to share it in my thumbs up and thumbs down, but I'm in a good mood at this time of year every year for a period because the NRL competition has kicked off. So that's where my head's at, thinking about rugby league.
More of that voice.
So, Gem, tonight we've got a conversation that I'd really like us to have about equity, diversity, and inclusion. Now, this is an idea or concept or a set of practices that people might be familiar with from their workplace, perhaps. And it is something which, you know, there are legitimate questions being asked about whether these ideas have the power or are capable of achieving the significant change that we need to combat really big problems that emerge in the patriarchy, that are growing in our community as far as white supremacy, and also class struggles, which keep the working poor out of Parliament House. These are all really big social challenges that we have.
It's an acknowledgement that practices of the past are not where we want to be headed towards, and they are active, positive, proactive solutions to, or proactive programs that stop us from either staying still or, as we've seen a lot these days, going backwards to the days of yore when there were no women in boardrooms and when there were no black people anywhere.
Yeah, and the paws were the paws, and they knew their place, and they weren't trying to get involved in, you know,
it also,
ways of power.
Yeah, and it's also, there is also research, right, that says that diversity of opinion, diversity of experience means that the solutions that you come up with as a business, as an entity, are going to be better. That diversity is good. It's good business.
Absolutely. The idea that if you can bring together a group of people who have different perspectives, experiences, ideas that they're discussing, debating, talking about, contending with, that the solution that you end up with at the end of that is a really robust one which is capable of achieving the change that you want. So it's the vehicle to be able to actually do the real work. So one of the things that we might have to do for the audience is just kind of explain out these terms that we're talking about. And the way that I'd like to do that is with the good old game of bang, marry, kill. So with the idea of equity, diversity, and inclusion, Jem, which would you bang, marry, or kill? With a little bit of explanation about why.
I always find this game so difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go in order. Don't ruin it, Gemma. I would bang inclusion. And these days I think inclusion sometimes gets replaced by belonging, which I quite like, because what I think we're talking about when we're talking about inclusion in a workplace is feeling a sense of belonging. When you don't feel like you're sticking out like a sore thumb and you feel as though you can bring your true self to work.
Your whole self.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the example that I always use when talking about this is that if everybody around the water cooler, I don't think they really have water coolers much anymore, but if everybody around the water cooler is talking about skiing holidays and you are somebody who has never seen or been to the snow, it doesn't make you feel like you belong in that workplace, mm-hmm. because you can't participate in the conversations that people are supposed to be having in their, you know, fun, personable time. You know, you can sort of be capable of doing the job. You can dress the way that everybody else is dressing, but that isn't enough to create a sense of belonging for you. So I choose to bang belonging.
Excellent. I would choose to bang diversity.
Okay.
Because I mean, diversity for me it's an interesting one, because diversity, when the point of reference is what? Maleness or whiteness? You know what I'm trying to say? So yeah.
What's the norm?
Yeah. What's normal if diversity is diverse? But I'd bang it, because sometimes you just have to like hate bang. So diversity, what does that say about me? We'll talk about that later. So diversity, I'd bang. But that's the one that I think also diversity has application in whatever context that you might be applying it, particularly for example, if your workplace is an Aboriginal community-controlled organisation. Diversity is still relevant to you, because you have to think about the diversity within your community. Queer people, people with disability, you know, people of all ages, you know, the full spectrum of diversity and what that means in any context becomes relevant. And it starts a conversation thinking about contexts where there is perhaps more hegemony. And so it's a relevant idea.
Absolutely.
What about equity?
I'm marrying equity.
Nice.
Equity, I think, is essentially what we're all trying to achieve from the ED, the I, the B, all of these sorts of measures, everything that we're talking about today. To me, equity is it's the end game.
Mm.
Where we are not anywhere remotely close to it. And I think that's why it starts. It's the E is the beginning, but you've got to marry it. I think it's the ultimate goal. It's what you're looking for. It's the forever relationship.
It is. I would also marry equity for exactly the same reasons. It's the part of the purpose, the why question. And for me, I would kill inclusion.
Why?
Because I think it is the least useful to us when we're thinking about what it actually achieves in a really tangible, meaningful way. I don't think it goes far enough. I think the belonging that you mentioned makes more sense. But that should be, you know, I think that workplaces, and I'm thinking about equity, diversity, inclusion in a in the workplace application, but I think that businesses or workplaces get selected, or rather people vote with their feet on matters of inclusion, as they should in 2024. I think that if you're trying to make your workplace, you know, more accessible for people with disability and more accessible in a way that people who are queer or people of colour.
Like, if you're not doing it, then
yeah, shame
people
on you.
Should just leave.
Yeah. And they just become quite obvious. Like, it's really hard today to have a workplace that is, you know, still all predominantly men. Like, you have to be, they should just become, like, really just, like, ha-ha. Like,
pariahs.
Yeah.
They should pariahs become of the business community.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I would kill diversity because of the opposite of that, essentially. Like, that it's kind of pointless if at the end of the day the culture of the place is still where you still feel like you don't belong there, with that you're not included. I mean, I think this is why, you know, we talk about these sorts of things. Often retention is the real focus area, right? People know how to get the diversity bit. They've got that bit down pat. The retention, the inclusion belonging piece is actually where they're struggling, because you bring everybody in and they're still like, oh yeah, I still don't fit in here. People still don't think that I'm as worthy to be here as they are. So I feel uncomfortable and I'm going to go and do something different.
Well, this exercise has achieved exactly what I wanted, which was to poke a bunch of big holes in this idea of equity, diversity, inclusion, or the ideas of them rather, and whether they're useful to us together to achieve what we ultimately want, which is significant social change. Jem, do you think that they go far enough? What else could be? Are we looking for something more radical to achieve this?
I mean, I think one thing that we have to talk about is the fact that most of the time when people are talking about equity, diversity and inclusion, what they focus on is women in the workplace, is around gender diversity. That seems to be a focus. That seems to be where they're comfortable with setting targets and with publishing numbers and creating initiatives and programs for women to be successful in the workplace, which is all great, but doesn't really cover diversity. We are 50% of the population, so it's not that hard. So that's one thing. I think that when we are talking about diversity, people's understanding of what that means doesn't tend to extend very far. The other issue, I think, is that in my experience, what you sort of see is a lot of collusion to something. Like, if I can, like, obviously it's not real, not actual collusion. Like, people aren't having underground meetings in gambling dens and having conversations about what they're all going to tick off as appropriate action in this space. But, you know, nobody's really sticking their neck out and being that sort of bold trailblazer that's going to introduce something super new and exciting. Everybody is only wanting to do as much as the next person is doing, and they're all keeping their eyes, you know, firmly across the norms of the sector, right?
So it's like the lowest common denominator type of approach.
100%. And so we haven't really seen any significant developments in the EDI space in a really long time. We're now sort of looking at, you know, from the black perspective, let's say, from the, I don't know how long reconciliation action plans have been around, probably between 10 and 20 years now, I'd say.
Well, the walk across the bridge was in 2000. Was it in 2000?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that'd be about that, I reckon.
Yeah. Was it in 2000? Oh, I don't know. Around there.
Yeah.
Anyway. And I think in that time, you know, there's been a lot of money put into this work, a lot of resources put into this work in terms of time, expertise, lots of research has been done. But, you know, we're still not seeing, you know, there's not a bunch of black CEOs, there's not a bunch of black partners in services organizations. You know, yes, you see a lot more black interns and black juniors and, you know, more participation in the sort of professional workspace for First Nations people. But when, you know, that ceiling is 100% there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of this comes back to that piece of inclusion / belonging. Like, we may be able to get in there. We may be able to sort of do the work and enjoy the work. But at the end of the day, if you still feel like you're a bit of a second class citizen, and if you still feel a bit like you can't really relate to your colleagues that you have to spend, you know, 35 hours a week with, it's unlikely that you're going to stay there. So I think that there needs to be leaders within the community, the business, you know, professional community in particular, that step up and actually put their money where their mouth is and actually do the hard work that needs to be done to actually get some real traction. Because I just don't think that we're really going anywhere particularly exciting.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that we need to find a solution to I mentioned it before, whatever the reference point is for the equity, diversity and inclusion. Because if we're saying that, you know, we're defaulting to male, stale and white as what's normal, then we've got a real problem, because we're not going to be able to we need to dismantle that first, really, to affect anything. And it's going to take real leadership. One of the things that I suppose concerns me about taking these approaches without any criticality is the kind of bigger structural conversations or structural problems that we don't get to have conversations about, particularly, you know, this idea of intersectionality and the ways in which, as a woman, and the I suppose the theory of intersectionality developed by a woman of colour, who said that if you are a woman of colour with disability, you know, which of these ideas is relevant? And she wasn't necessarily talking about Kimberly Crenshaw, is the academic who developed the idea of intersectionality. But there isn't a space, it seems, in EDI conversations to talk about that explicitly. I could be wrong, and maybe we can get a guest at some point to come in to talk about it with you, because you've got more of an expertise in this area than I do. But missing and murdered Indigenous women, I think, is something which is a really clear example of a justice issue, an equity issue, which gets almost no airtime and no attention, and is really relevant to a lot of women of colour, a lot of Indigenous women in the case of missing and murdered Indigenous women. But, you know, how do we even get to talk about that?
It's so true and it's so sad. I think that we as a society are making some, I don't know, it feels odd to say that we're making some ground on shining a light on family violence, on generally poor behaviour and criminal behaviour towards women. But the circumstances in which it gains a lot of mainstream media activity tends to always be when the person, when the woman in question is not just white, but like pretty. And when you're looking at it from the perspective of, you know, as a percentage, the circumstances in which women are being are victims of abuse, are victims of murder, of assault. We, you know, Indigenous women, but also women of colour in general, are unfortunately, you know, overrepresented in those numbers. And I, as much as you sort of hear, you know, I see the count of women who have been killed by a partner, I sort of, you see, you know, not so much White Ribbon Day, that kind of got a bit, that had some problems, but, you know, there is a bit more conversation about it, but what you see on in mainstream media, where you see real outrage from the community, tends to be in circumstances where the victim is white, mm-hmm. And thin. Like, you know, there, and so I think that intersectionality question is something that people really need to grapple with. Like, why is it that the murder of a, you know, pretty white woman is more deserving of attention, or more interesting apparently to the broader population, than the death of an Aboriginal woman? That's, you know, that's a disgusting question to have to sort of talk about, but you know, and this is why, again, sort of coming back to issues of gender are not enough.
It's, yeah, agreed. It's not enough. And this is the where I come back to as a kind of critique light, if you like, of equity, diversity, and inclusion, because, you know, it feels to me that we adopt a lot of the frameworks or understandings to talk about these issues from the United States. And that's a real trap, because you only have to look to the United States and see how distinct it is in its politics and culture and what they're facing. For example, they have knowingly elected a man who had sexually assaulted women. You know, there's evidence of that, and that is a known issue. And that becomes the kind of limits to which we're able to understand things. And so when we kind of wholesale adopt that here, then we are also within the confines of that as being how we understand things, rather than developing a way to kind of adapt these ideas, which I think there are still great merit in these concepts for here, but we don't do the work to actually apply them and make them make sense in our Australian context, including Indigenous sovereignty, Indigenous women, and intersectionality as far as Indigenous folks are concerned. What do you think about that?
I think that whenever we're letting America kind of dictate our standards, we need to be questioning what the hell is going on. I mean, I think that we're seeing a lot of that backward stepping that I was talking about. Like, I've been watching, this is going to sound really crazy, and, you know, we may be hitting the edit button pretty hard here, but I have been watching Cold Case lately. So those of you who know me know that I love going back and watching crime shows from the early 2000s and 90s. So I've been watching Cold Case, right, which is actually a really great show. Didn't watch it when it originally aired, but it's all about looking at crimes that happened a long time ago. And so there's lots of episodes on, you know, gay bashing and on the murder and extremely poor treatment of African-American people, particularly African-American women. Lots of episodes on, domestic and family violence. It's really it's really horrific. But you look at these sort of things and think, with all that we know now, how on earth can people still be having conversations about whether or not this is appropriate behavior? Why are we kind of sitting back and, contemplating or, weighing up the pros and cons of whether or not we allow fascism in our streets? Why are we having conversations about whether or not schools can be co-ed or not anymore? How have we not learned anything from the past? And how have we not learned as a nation that we shouldn't necessarily be looking to the USA as a model for how we should be behaving?
Bam. Love it. I love it. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Blacksiders on 2SER. And tonight we've been talking about equity, diversity and inclusion and whether these ideas, practices and strategies are enough to combat the institutional racism, the violence and the rise of literal neo-Nazis and also the ongoing marginalization of poor folk in our community. It's been a huge chat, but now I want to change gears a little, Jem, and just check in your thumbs up and thumbs down for this week, maybe starting with your thumbs up.
My thumbs up for this week is, and I've been wearing them for a while now because I got them for Valentine's Day, but I have, I don't know how I would describe them other than old lady style slippers. So they're like a slide on mule. You all know what I'm talking about, I'm sure. And I am absolutely in love with them. The convenience of being able to slip them on and off makes them feel less oppressive on the feet. And I also, like in the movies, set them up next to my bed in the right direction so that when I wake up in the morning, I just slide my feet into them. They are one of the best gifts that I've ever received. I'm feeling like I'm really leaning into my middle age.
Thanks, I love it. My thumbs up for this week is, of course, the South Sydney Rabbitohs. So the NRL season has kicked off and I just love everything about the South Sydney Rabbitohs, but maybe not for the reasons that you might think. It's actually because how much they piss off the NRL establishment, especially those eastern suburbs teams that just get quite annoyed by how popular the Rabbitohs are, how much they think that the players get away with being a bit uppity, a bit, cheeky, a bit expecting, the regular adoration and accolades that every other NRL player in the league seems to get. But because those cheeky Rabbitohs also expect the same, that maybe they might be just getting a bit too big for their boots. I just love that, the NRL commentators, some of them still go pretty hard against the Rabbitohs players, particularly Latrell. I think that people really go after him. But the pairing of Latrell and Jack Whiten, that's Latrell Mitchell and Jack Whiten in this season, I think is going to be really exciting to watch. I just love the idea of two best mates playing in the biggest league in the country.
What is it about the Bunnies that people are so obsessed with? Because they are obsessed.
Yeah.
Is there something in the water in Redfern?
Do you mean like a contamination situation?
Maybe, people are microdosing on LSD by accident over there or something. They're just really, really into it. And there's that, I love that, is it still an account, that random Souths guy?
Yes, that's like still that very you funny.
Always see somebody in a Souths jersey I don't know.
I just really love reading some of the, you know, I would call it unhinged reporting, sports journalism that just is like a rabid dog hatred of Latrell and Jack. And for anyone that wasn't paying attention, the two of them were involved in an incident in Canberra just over a year ago where they were charged for fighting in public, and the charges were withdrawn by the ACT police because after going to a defended hearing, because the cop made it up. He made up the what he witnessed and what he was relying upon as the basis of laying the charge against
Good
the pair of them.
Lord.
So I just think that there is this meta narrative when it comes to the Rabbitohs, which is it reminds me a lot of the, and I'm not saying it's exactly the same, but it does have parallels, the kind of right wing, you know, baseless hatred of Taylor. Like, it's just, it just becomes this thing that is just a reason for them to
kind of like
them.
The way that I hate everybody else that's named Gemma.
Yes.
I have this weird
irrational.
Like, I meet somebody, they're named Gemma, I'm like, oh, well, they must be awful. I'm the only Gemma.
So, you know, I'll try and work in some of my Rabbitohs commentary through the show.
Looking forward to it.
People might hate it, people might love it, but that's not what we're here for. We've got to be balanced.
My thumbs down this week is something that, frankly, I didn't know existed before, and now I'm scared. Worker surveillance software. So I don't know if you've heard this case where somebody who worked at a large, I want to say insurance company, got fired for essentially slacking off when she's working at home. And then it turns out that they have this software installed on their computers, like your work computer, that tracks how much time you're spending on it, what time you're logging in, all of those sorts of statistics. I just think it would only take one case, obviously, like this one, to come out where then you would know that your company uses this sort of software for your entire kind of system to just crumble. I think the second that people feel like they're not trusted in a workplace is the second that they start stealing post-it notes, you know?
Yeah.
That you then work really hard to find any loophole you can, because it becomes this sort of power struggle between employer and employee. But I just think working from home was, you know, essential during COVID lockdowns. Everybody seemed to get on fine. Business ticked over. Everybody still got things done. Now this obsession with bringing people back into the office is actually something that is very detrimental to, I think, a lot of progress that working mothers have made in particular, in being able to find that work-life balance, which has been a really positive outcome. So thumbs down, worker surveillance software.
How to make sure that your staff do not lack you.
You have to then do the Homer Simpson and get one of those little water drinking birds to touch a keyboard, and Ferris Bueller, put a mannequin in your chair. And I mean, that's what I'd do.
So my thumbs down is also related to the NRL season kicking off, and it's gambling, the online gambling.
Ooh,
it's really depressing. It's getting worse, and more young people are getting dragged into a situation where they are being exposed to and being allowed to gamble huge amounts of money. It's very scary. And of course, organized commercial corporate sporting leagues are the worst for it. It's the reason why the NRL has, you know, launch the season in Las Vegas, because the league is trying to crack into that market. Of course, it's all being led by the chair of the NRL, who comes from a gambling background, from New South Wales Racing. So, you know, it's no secret that sport is very much embedded and entrenched in gambling. But it doesn't make it any less sad to kind of see it become more and more of a problem, especially for young people.
I don't think we talk enough about the impact of gambling on families. We talk, I think, a bit more about the impact of alcohol on families. But the impacts that gambling has are absolutely devastating. And I definitely think we need to be doing more about it. I did hear recently, so the government has this I don't know what it's called, and I wish I looked it up earlier, but you can sign up on a website to basically stop yourself from accessing online gambling sites. And they've had really good uptake of it, particularly from young people.
Yeah, great.
So that's a really positive sign, I think, is that the more that we, you know, talk about it, at least those, you know, young people that are turning 18, hello, Noah, I'm talking to you, can... you know, think before they start, even begin it, because it is so addictive and it is a life destroyer.
And I think those stories of the young lives that have absolutely been wrecked, the most recent one I read was of the 16-year-old who was able to go into licensed venues and gamble at the TAB, and his mother just absolutely distraught, like going into the venues and saying, please do not serve my son. He is under 18. I think the more that we can get those stories out into the community where, you know, the families are consenting and wanting it to be used in that way, will just really help people understand how much of a huge problem this is.
Just watch the football. It's fun without having
it. It is so much fun on it. Without betting.
Next week, I think we should start with thumbs down so that we end on a positive note.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, fair.
But nonetheless, it's been a great show. I hope you have a good night. And we'll chat to you next time. See you, Petey.
Good night, Jem. Bye.